People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
It's not a controversial vision. Everyone deserves a place to call home. The mission of Homeward Bound of Marin is of opening doors to safety, dignity, hope, and independence. And the numbers speak for themselves. 80% of the families and 81% of the adults who complete Homeward Bound programs move on to stable housing. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we're pleased to present Dr. Mary Kay Sweeney, Executive Director of Homeward Bound of Marin, and Micah Berman, Homeward Bound's Program Director. Welcome, Mary Kay and Micah.
Thank you.
Hi.
20 years you've been with Homeward Bound, right?
It's hard to believe. Yes.
And things have changed? Has the landscape changed?
Oh, the landscape has changed dramatically, both in terms of the numbers of people who need help, the numbers of people who support that help, and the ways in which we need to do business in terms of the non-affordability of housing in the community.
So more people need help, but more people are stepping up.
That's right.
So people are surprised to learn that there is a significant homeless population in Marin County. I always think of that Farms in Berkeley campaign. You know, maybe we should launch Homeless in Marin.
Yes. It's every time I go out and speak someplace, I have the exact same response from people.
They chuckle.
Yeah. What do you mean homeless in Marin County? One of the issues about homelessness in this county is, you know, we have this beautiful county with a lot of open space, over 80% dedicated open space. And so people are not as visible being homeless here as they may be in a city or on a street corner. Certainly in San Rafael, you see more visibility of homeless people, but there are an awful lot of people in encampments. There's lots of folks who are, you know, sharing houses, couch surfing, living in cars, living out in the boondocks. You know, it's just a different landscape for homeless people in this county than it is other places.
Do you have a sense of the numbers, Micah?
Well, the numbers are getting bigger, and I think the problem's definitely out there. Even living in a community like San Anselmo, where I venture in and out of San Rafael, I actually feel more of the problem even coming within our community and people having to face it. And I overlook a program in Mill Valley as well as Novato. Mill Valley, you know, again, a problem that, you know, it's kind of growing throughout Marin. And seniors, too. That's another subject to really talk about within Marin. It's becoming more and more obvious in terms of the rent prices that people just, you know, things happen and people can't afford to have housing. So the programs I overlook have a lot of seniors that have come out of homelessness, which is really, I mean, it's really hard to face families that are homeless. You know, my wife, who's not at all involved in the nonprofit world, you know, will say, you know, I saw a family with a sign outside the Safeway somewhere in San Anselmo or somewhere like that. It's always hard, you know, always touches my heart when I see a child, you know, who's in that predicament. However, seniors too, same thing. When you get folks who are getting closer to that age where people should just be having peace of mind, and then you see some of these folks really struggling because they can't really find the rent. And end up on the street. And so a lot of the folks that are in our program are seniors 62 and above who have been homeless. So, you know, there's a little bit of we see the mountains and the lakes, but there's some reality here in Marin of people who are really suffering. And the flip side, of course, is there's some people that can really help them if you know how to reach them.
Is it important to get numbers? I know that so often when you're applying for funding and that sort of thing, and to make a point to shock people, we need to say, here's what it has grown from and to. So do you have a sense of that now? How do you even gauge it?
Well, that's a very good question, because I think the numbers can be misleading, even though there are numbers that we have. Every 2 years, we are required to do a one-day count of homelessness in the community. And the last time we did the count, which is now almost 2 years ago, we usually do it the last week of January, one day only. The numbers were not as significant as we would have thought, because our feeling is that there are lots of people always asking for help, and we're not able to really accommodate everybody. But there are 930 people, single adults and families, who are homeless and at one given day. But the methodology for counting homeless people on a given day is kind of skewed, because you can't really find every single person who is homeless. Some people don't want to be found, and some people would just as soon, you know, escape someplace else while this one day count is going on, because people know when it happens.
And there's shame involved, isn't
there? Of course there's, yeah. And there's also privacy. You know, people really don't want to be discovered necessarily. That's one of the reasons why some folks are out there. On the other hand, there are lots of families that Mika was referencing too that really do need the help and really don't know where to go for help, or really are struggling and just hanging on by their fingernails to stay in the housing that they may have. So that's a huge issue. There are 4,300 people who are precariously housed, as we count them in the community. And that's the kind of situation that Mick is referring to, and that we see all the time, that just on the edge of becoming homeless because but for a paycheck, but for some kind of a difficulty with health or losing a job or whatever, that's, you know.
And our family programs have long wait lists. I mean, in terms of families, that they're showing up, homeless families who are just waiting to get housing. But there is something important about the numbers. I come from working at the San Francisco Foundation. And in terms of foundations, more and more in the last 10 years or even longer, you know, outcomes and numbers are becoming much more important. It's much more competitive. And just saying you work in the homeless arena, it's not going to be enough.
Right.
In terms of working and getting people into jobs, getting people into housing, showing that it's not just all good, you know, light feeling that you're doing good work with them. You really need to show results. So numbers are important. Big numbers sometimes impact people, but personal stories, I think in terms of how Homeward Bound kind of gets the message out. And I can, you know, I've seen these stories often over the years of working with people, seeing the small successes and the big successes. But they make a big difference too. And people realize that people around the corner from them, or people that are serving them at Starbucks, or people who are working at Whistle Stop or different places, these are people that have come out of situations that you almost wouldn't believe it. You know, in my work, I've worked with people that have been professors and teachers and had PhDs, and, you know, and other people who just different backgrounds. It really throws you for a loop.
I think in general, the public thinks of the homeless population as people with mental illness, the people that you see begging on the streets or not begging on the streets,
right.
That it's immigrant families.
Yeah.
In fact, that is some subset,
yeah.
Right? But
yep.
At this point, would you say it's just a subset?
A subset. I think, yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think the National Alliance Against Homelessness sometimes issues this whole thing about the average age of a homeless person in the country. What would you think it would be? I mean, lots of people I talk to say, 40, nine. So the number of families, children who are homeless is staggering. They're not as visible often because families are reluctant to really acknowledge that they're homeless for fear of losing their kids, you know. So
average age of a homeless person is nine.
That's all the families. You know, one of the things I see too, and this is, yeah, there is definitely mental health. I mean, depression and schizophrenia is a big part of, if you look at the stories of people that are homeless, but who I work with, and I work with a lot of moms, domestic violence is huge. I mean, now you see it, you know, the football player, whatever, it's a big story. But the reality is that almost all of the families that I deal with, because I don't, it's mostly single moms, there's domestic violence there.
And that too is a symptom of another problem, right?
Oh, it is. I mean, a lot of times there's drugs and there's, you know, all kinds of things and there's misfortune. But for a lot of the moms, that's at the root of why they end up being homeless. They take the brave step to walk away, but there's a cost to that. So, you know, it's not always that case of the mental health does play a big part, but there's misfortune and...
which came first,
right? Yes,
the chicken
exactly.
Or the egg.
Right.
Once you're homeless, I would venture to say 99% of you are going to be depressed.
Yeah.
Right.
Right,
yeah, yeah. And, you know, for some of the folks we find too, in terms of getting out of the homelessness and building up to getting out of poverty, if there's less of the deep issues, it's a little bit of an easier journey. I work with some moms where... if it's just an issue where something happened in the family and they're off on their own now and they can go to college and get an education and get a job, they can move out. But for the moms that have domestic violence or alcohol or drug related issues, it's a much longer, and mental health issues, it's a much longer journey. And so there you need a lot more deeper work. It's not just enough to give them the housing. There has to be more services on top of it. So it's a different journey for different people based on how deep the problems are.
In Marin County, Homeward Bound is the chief provider, right, of shelter and residential services. Mm-hmm. How many people do you serve each year, and what kind of services do you provide?
Every night we have about 450 people in our facilities, and that's 14 programs throughout the county. In a given year, it depends on how quickly people move out of the shelter system to get into housing. And, of course, it's becoming more and more challenging now, but anywhere from 1,100 to 1,500 people a year we may serve. As you know, now the rents in Marin County are just astronomically high. And so people, even if they have a pretty decent job, are going to be hard-pressed to find a place because also the vacancy rate is extremely low. So the supply is what we need more of in terms of getting people through the systems that we have. And that's why people like our organizations like Eden Housing or EAH or other providers of and developers are really important to partner with so that we can make these things happen.
And, you know, I mean, Homeward Bound is structured like a lot of, if you go to San Mateo or Santa Clara or Alameda County, a lot of these homeless nonprofits, Homeward Bound looks like a lot of them. They have emergency housing, they have the shelters, they have transitional housing where people can go for less of a period and then get into employment, and then they have more of permanent housing. And that's where Homeward Bound is moving towards more with places like Eden Housing. There's also an entrepreneurial side to Homeward Bound, which I think makes it very different than other nonprofits. It's not just an organization that's going out there and asking necessarily for money, but they're actually generating revenue by teaching skills and having a culinary school. And we could talk about that more, but that makes it a very unique organization. But back to the focus on not just emergency and transitional, but moving more to permanent housing so folks get into housing where they don't have to worry about, or I'm going to have to leave in 6 months. But right away, they're in housing, and then permanent supportive housing where they have the permanent housing and there's a social work staff or a community center where they can get services on top of the housing. That's really the trend. It's been the trend now for 10, 20 years, but we're seeing more of it with Homeward Bound. We're seeing more of it in Marin. Eden Housing is getting, you know, bigger and bigger doing a lot of this permanent supportive housing.
And it works.
It does work. I mean, I was skeptical. I came from New York City. I lived there for like 8-9 years. And, you know, there was a lot of drug testing and to get into programs. You know, you couldn't quite just move into the housing. You had to prove that you were ready for housing. And for a long time, I really kind of believed that philosophy because as a social worker on the front lines, I really would prefer to work with someone who was clean and sober and had a lot of their mental health issues. It's, you know, it's easier to work with that type of person. However, what I've seen
starts with a roof.
That's right. But here in, you see it at Fireside where I work, and you see it at Warner Creek where I work too, that when you get these families and you get these seniors into housing with a roof over their head, it's just like a big sigh of relief.
Right.
And then you can focus. Okay, their kids are going to school because you've got the housing. You know they're going to school. And now the mom can focus on this. And they have staff right there in the community center. They can walk across just literally 10 yards and get some help. And so that takes we've seen much folks staying in their place for much longer, seniors especially, but families too. The retention's much higher. So I really believe a lot more now in housing first. As long as you've got the staff on site and you really have some boundaries and you have a provider like Eden Housing that understands the difference between just having market rate housing and having permanent supportive housing, because you have to be able to give people chances. You have to work with them in order for them to survive and stay in the housing.
Yes. Marin County has not been known as the friendliest environment for affordable housing, to build and create new affordable housing. Why do you think that is?
Perhaps that's an understatement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know if it's a fear. The fear of people who may be different, if it's the underlying classism in this community, in addition to the racism that we have here that we don't deal with. Mm-hmm. I've found when I first moved to Marin County that there's no neighborhood feel at all compared to where I've lived before. And it's really hard to get to know people here. So I'm not sure if that's part of it, but I believe, well, NIMBY, I think, is based in fear. You know, I think that people are just really afraid of anybody different coming into their community who doesn't, you know, work for a hedge fund or something, you know, that someone who works at your Starbucks isn't the same caliber person. You know, it's painful, actually.
Yeah, it's painful. I mean, you can look at Fireside, which we've been around now for 5-6 years, down in Mill Valley, pretty elite community, a very wealthy community. They stood up really strong. There was a huge movement against Fireside fear. What was going to happen? I mean, it's next to Buckeye. It's kind of removed from downtown Mill Valley, but it's still right there. And I wasn't around for that battle, but it was a pretty typical battle of what
it was difficult.
Yeah, and it was difficult. Well, we've been there now. It's really there haven't been many waves in the last 5 years. We've got more now community coming into our place, Mill Valley Rotary. We've got a church that's located just literally 5 minutes that's so involved with our community, getting to know the people. I mean, it's like, you know, 32 seniors, 18 families. I mean, it's just, and a lot of them working in the community now and going to school in the community. So I think it's a lot of fear. I mean, I came from San Francisco to Marin. Marin is kind of a protected environment, open space. We have it great. I mean, Marin, you know, I always tell my kids, this is a dream. We're living the dream right here. Look around, you know, and
the dream
and
is also the bubble, though.
It's the bubble. But so that's what people want to protect, really. Yeah. You know, so this is what we have. So how is this? Let's not mess it up. It's really mm-hmm. good right now. And I think what Homeward Bound is doing really well that I really like, it's, I drive by that complex in Corte Madera all the time, mm-hmm. which is fairly large. I mean, I read the newspapers about it, but it does seem kind of big. It's to kind of do things incrementally. And we'll talk a little bit more about yep. Alma Village. Yeah. But if you're going to do new housing, you have to really reach out to the community, talk to them, and then do it small. You know, it doesn't have to be large. It can be small. It can be the impact. And then people can see, this can work. So Mary Kay can talk more about that. But it really is how you approach it, how you deal with the fear, and how you deal with the community and the people that have the power in the community to talk to them to make way so it's successful.
Right. So after 2 years in Novato of people just screaming and hollering about how they are not for affordable housing, we came to the city council with a proposal to build Alma Village, which is 14 units of housing, family housing. And but before we did that, we went to all the community members out that we could identify who were not in favor of affordable housing and talked to them individually, not as a group.
Usually people don't admit it. They say, I'm in favor of affordable housing, but not this particular proposal. Right.
But when they go to those city council meetings, you know who they are then. So that's how we identified who they were. And there also was a committee in Novato that really studied the whole affordable housing issue and for the housing elements in the city. So we went to each person. We said, here's what we're planning to do. What do you think about it? And so the main issue, as Mika was talking about, was for them, it was density. That was the issue they were saying was a real problem. So we said, okay, we'll address the density issue. Then what? What else is there?
Well,
there's
just density.
Crime.
Right.
There's
right.
the crime issue, right, you know, right, and there's right. the parking, and there's traffic, and there's this. And so we said, well, you know, we're putting this, we identified this piece of land that was really close to transportation within walking distance of Hamilton School and Safeway and all those amenities and thought that this would be a perfect location for it. And then people said, well, no, the freeway, you know, the whole ambiance of the freeway is going to be bad for the kids. So you know, there was that kind of, we said, well, we can't really have it both ways.
Homelessness isn't really good for kids. Right.
But there is kind of a classism in understanding the issues because Fireside is very close to the highway near Buckeye, near Manzanita. It's fairly close to the highway. And sometimes I'll go online and look at the chat rooms, what they're saying about Fireside. And a lot of the argument is, you know, how can you put our low-income folks, you throw them there next to the highway and there's smoke coming from the highway and it's not good. But, you know, and I work day-to-day with a lot of the families. These families have come from really tough situations.
Right.
They're coming out of neighborhoods that have a lot of violence or they're coming from families where the father was very violent. And they need a new start. And if you put them there in Buckeye in beautiful Mill Valley – that gets them to pretty good schools, Willow Creek and other places in Sausalito, and they look out and there's sunshine and there's no violence right there, and they can go and walk to the bus and go to San Rafael. This is a really, really significant step for them. So sometimes there's just a little bit of that, right, it's almost like two sides. You know, we don't want them here, but then we have them here, you're going to treat them like that. So
it's kind of an issue.
You have to get knee deep into the issues to understand there are people in Mill Valley, like this Peace Lutheran Church that's worked very close with us, or a lot of volunteers we get who are people from the community who are pretty privileged, but they get to know us and they get to know the people, and then they can start to realize how ludicrous some of those arguments are and how some of the fear is really unfounded. And how it really makes the people feel good who are at Fireside to see people from the community come from the. For a long time, I didn't have any interaction from Mill Valley. For the first two or three years, nothing, except for Peace Lutheran Church. But besides that, didn't hear. But the last couple of years, we hired a woman who is from Mill Valley, who's very involved with the Girl Scouts, and it's brought a lot of outside people from Mill Valley into Fireside. It's been really nice to see, and it makes the people feel really, really good to feel welcomed in the community.
They want to feel a part of it.
Sure.
People want to be part of something.
Absolutely.
You know? And once they become part of something, they can contribute to the community.
Well, we have fear of what we don't know.
Yeah.
So when we sit across a table and break bread, suddenly it's not so scary.
Yeah.
Eden Housing is a partner with Homeward Bound at these two local communities, Fireside and Warner Creek. Tell us about that partnership.
Well, I'll let Mary Kay talk a little bit more of the early history of it, but I'll just say it's a great partnership because Eden has a lot of the housing, and they're very strong on the property management. And Homeward Bound, and they're not necessarily Marin. They weren't for many years. They were much more focused on the East Bay and the South Bay, and mostly the East Bay, Hayward area. But Marin, you know, Homeward Bound is very local, knows the issues, knows the people. And so that in a partnership, Eden's really looking for somebody who can come in and really, and we're very strong on the services part. Even though Eden does have some services, primarily they you know, collect the rent and fix the places and do the maintenance. However, when you can pair up and have someone who can really deal with some more of the social issues and the support service, which Homeward Bound does. So, you know, it's a partnership with Permanent Supportive Housing that's been going on for a while, and it's the Housing First model and wraparound services for people there. But it's a partnership that has to be managed well. It doesn't necessarily always work. It has to work if both sides really understand the mission. But you can talk, I guess, more about the early history.
Well, the early history was that parcel was identified, the Fireside Motel, back in 2000, and it was Citizens Housing who really bought it.
That was empty forever,
wasn't it? It was empty forever.
Yeah.
And it was also kind of a difficult place to manage, I think, for people who were doing that. So anyway, Citizens Housing ended up purchasing the property and then went through the whole approval processes to make sure they could build something there. In the course of doing that, they had really, I think they had grown too quickly or something. Anyway, they went out of business and Eden Housing came in and took over, which was really a rescue, mm-hmm. for sure, a very welcomed one. So that's why we had partnered with Citizens and then with Eden, because we knew that we couldn't, Homeward Bound couldn't build all the housing that was needed at all. We're not really developers, but we have built some housing, but we knew that the people who really did that as a kind of their mission would be important to partner with, so we could make sure that we can get some of our folks who are the most fragile in the community into the housing. And that was kind of our main mission to do that. So that's why it's worked out really well, because I think nonprofit developers are recognizing that permanent supportive housing is really an important piece of their puzzle here, not just permanent housing, but permanent supportive housing. So you need to have some services for some folks who are really more fragile.
Can the relationship that Homeward Bound and Eden has created, can that be replicated?
Well, it has been too. We work with EAH Housing too, and two of the projects that they have in the community, San Clemente and also Meadow Park. So yeah, it can be replicated. The difficulty, of course, is finding a housing, a space to build housing in this community, and then getting through the approval process. I mean, it's a monumental task. It's like an Everest thing.
The Fireside worked out really well. And I interact a lot on a daily basis with folks from Eden. And then Warner Creek came about, mm-hmm. In downtown Novato, and they pretty much created the same model at Fireside, at Warner, except Warner's only seniors, whereas mm-hmm. Fireside has families and seniors, a little mixed. But both have community centers, both have social workers, staff from Homeward Bound there doing services, and both have a property manager working with someone from Homeward Bound side by side. So there's very similarities, and it really went well. I mean, there's... logistically, Warner Creek's really great because it's right mm-hmm. next to a downtown, and it's next to a grocery store. Fireside's a little bit more removed, so some more challenges. We had to work a lot with taxi vouchers, bus vouchers, providing a little bit more transportation assistance. I call it car therapy. I spend a lot of my time driving seniors and families to different places, but that's the time for me when I can speak with them and really help them out.
It works with teenagers.
It works with my son now. When I shoot baskets, I get to hear, he's in middle school now, so I get to hear a lot more on the walk to the bus or on the basketball court mm-hmm. than I would in our house. It's definitely, you can duplicate it and it can work. You learn a lot from it.
Do you have any tips? Because many of our listeners work in the field. Any tips for forming these kinds of mutual beneficial relationships between agencies?
Well, I think that we have to form relationships in this field because it's so challenging and difficult. And I think especially in a place like Marin County, that's probably different from a lot of different places because we are so small. We have to work together because if we're not going to do this together, it's not going to get done. You know, so I think the more we can reach out and work with each other on and put aside the institutional egos that are sometimes there to kind of, you know, get through those barriers and focus on the mission of what we're trying to accomplish together. That's the biggest thing, I think.
Yeah. And from my perspective, you know, the day-to-day working on the site, it's constant reminders of me working with a property manager and saying, okay, you know, you're out there to collect the rent, you're giving them a lease violation, but here I am, I can actually go in and I have a little bit of assistance. I work with 12 different other organizations in Marin who can provide, you know, some transportation system or maybe rental assistance so they don't lose that housing, you know, just because something happens with their car or something happens with their job. And really working side by side with the property manager and figuring out how we can work as a team. So they understand this isn't just regular housing. You know, if someone's doing loud music or if someone has a drug relapse or something, it doesn't mean necessarily they're going to be out on the street the next week. There may be something that we can do because this is a different type of housing. It's supportive housing.
Right. And part of what you're doing really is taking people from that level of just mere survival to actually helping them thrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you asked earlier about folks with mental illness, and we have several programs for folks who are mentally ill, and a couple of them are permanent supportive housing. And I'll tell you, the difference you said before too, a roof makes is just incredible. Once people become stably housed, they're much more likely to be on a road to recovery from whatever is troubling them, whatever their barriers are to thriving in the community. And we've seen that over and over again. One of our permanent supportive housing projects for folks who are mentally ill. Every single person now has a job. That's unheard of. That would never have happened had they been out there in the streets or in a shelter.
And that's because of partnerships, right?
Yeah.
That survivalist. That's a really interesting term, survivalist, because I deal a lot with families and seniors who come in our community center, and there's still that survival. I mean, we laugh about it, but there's still that survivalist attitude of grabbing as much food as they can, you know, raiding that refrigerator, you know, coming into my office and saying, I need that. And just, it's, you know, but over
hoarding,
but over time, you see that change when people get more comfortable and people realize that the community is going to be there for them. The relationships, people aren't going to abandon them. It you can see that change over time. But you have to understand that where the kids are coming from is very moving from shelter to shelter or just not having. It's very hard for me to get a connection to that because I've been very privileged. I've had a lot in my life. And so to just kind of see that survivalist attitude and to people who work with me to remind them that that's where it's coming from. It's not that they're stealing from the refrigerator. They've been deprived.
Endless need.
Right. Endless
need.
What's going to be there
it's
tomorrow.
It's instinct.
Yeah, it's instinct.
They didn't have
that
filled when they were kids.
Right.
So they
right.
are looking right. always to have that filled.
Right. And so I see our role and my role very much as being kind of, maybe kind of the first person or a person right now in their life who's going to be, they can depend on. If they ask me for something, you know, I always joke with Mary Kay that when people ask me for something, I get it. I run. I do it fast. You know, it's almost an exaggeration of it, but it really wakes people up to realize, okay, this guy's serious. He's really, Homeward Bound is really, finally we found somebody who's going to really be there for us. Now, if they do something that they're not supposed to do, then I have that relationship and I'll say to them, you know what? You know, the property manager's telling me that you can't put stuff outside your unit. Eden's very, very particular about having the place look good and there's strict rules. You can't have this, that. And for a lot of people, that's too much. But I tell them, look, you know, on one hand, you're getting all these services, but on the other hand, you have to stay within these rules because I've seen people evicted. And my job is to keep you in your housing. So a lot of it's built on relationships. We learned that a lot in Homeward Bound, and I really believe that now, seeing it after 5 or 6 years, that with the same person there, time over, every day, every month, every year, you just build these relationships and allows you to go to people and say, hey, you know, you got to get that rent in, or, you know, so
right.
it's a pretty good model.
One of the best ways for people to understand the impact of these sorts of programs is to hear a specific success story. Can you tell us about a client whose success really warmed your heart?
Wow.
All of them, but
there's so many. But offhand, I'm thinking about a woman who came to Mill Street, which is our entry point for single adults in San Rafael. It's a shelter, night to night shelter, and she came and she was pregnant. She was like in her early 20s, and And as she tells the story now, I didn't know her as well then as I do now. But anyway, that she was like completely frightened. She didn't know what she was going to do. She's by herself. There's no support. She's coming into a shelter this night tonight, and she's going to have a baby in a month, you know. So eventually she got to New Beginnings Center, then into our family program, and then she had her baby, you know. Then she moved into one of our transitional housing units and went to school. And she became a legal assistant and now has an excellent job in Mill Valley.
How did she get child care?
She got child care through Head Start, you know, because that's another partnership we've created too, to make sure that our families will have with their kids a Head Start. So she had her kid in Head Start, really cute little guy. And now she's got a really good job in Mill Valley as a legal assistant and can afford market rate housing, which is kind of unusual for our folks to be able to make that kind of a leap.
Yeah.
But she was given the stability and the encouragement and the support to be able to move forward. And I think what you said earlier too, Mika, is really important, that, you know, many of us who do this work come from privilege. You know, we don't understand what it means to be under privilege, you know, and all the people we serve are underprivileged. They haven't had the breaks we've had. They haven't had what we've had in our lives. And we're trying to kind of even the playing field so they can have the kind of support and services they need to move forward so they can contribute to society just like they want to. They want to be of help.
Yeah,
to.
I mean, there's so many stereotypes out there about folks that are poor. It baffles me because the families that I work with, I'm kind of constantly amazed. When I look at I always say, you know, I've got a wife and kids, and I say, my wife took off tomorrow to go to Hawaii and never came back. I mean, I would need some serious help. I'm not sure I could handle it for more than a couple of days. Uh-huh. I'm watching some of these moms juggle, you know, College of Marin, working, handling the kids. Some of them have, a disabled spouse. It's amazing the success stories that I see on a day-to-day basis. On the senior level, the successes are not as huge as I see the families. It's just that the seniors, they're staying active. They're connecting with community. They're being busy, you know, and just kind of enjoying that part of their life. The families, I mean, there's one family at Fireside, particularly to me, that is interesting, is three generations, a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter. I see them all succeeding. But the struggle is they're an immigrant family. The mom didn't speak a lot of English when she came originally and was working very kind of low-income jobs and trying to make it. And now, through the years, she's gone to College of Marin. She's learned English. She now has more of a programming-type job at a nonprofit. The grandmother's involved with our yoga, and the daughter is in a good school, Willow Creek. And so I can see it working on many different – they're all plugging into Homeward Bound at different levels. But there's lots of moms that I see like that. At Fireside, the theme tends to be going to College of Marin, getting some level of education, working full-time, and keeping the kids in school. That is hugely successful, keeping the kids in school, staying free of the drugs and alcohol, and starting to work with a family therapist that we have full-time and starting to deal with some of the issues and the residue from domestic violence. So, when I go to work and I see moms getting up and getting their kids off to school at 7 in the morning and then going to work and getting into the cars and driving, that's a huge success.
Tell us just a little bit, because we are now almost out of time, about the cooking programs. I got lost on your website the other day and found myself inviting friends to sign up for a cooking session with some of your top chefs.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, well, about 14 years ago, we started a program called Fresh Starts Culinary Academy. And we've revised it recently so that we have like three tiers of training. Tier one is, of course, the entry point, and people come in and for 6 weeks, they learn basic skills and food handling and all that sort of thing. Second tier, they work more in the catering field that we have. We have our own social enterprise, as Mika referenced before, where we do catering on-site and off-site for individuals and groups and families and all that kind of thing. Then we also run the Jackson Cafe. We do all the cooking for that down in San Rafael. So that's tier three students who by that time, so they've had experiences in institutional cooking, catering, and then now restaurant work. So after 16 weeks, they have run the gamut of the kinds of jobs that are out there in the food industry. And then after they get through the tier three, we have a big graduation, and that happens every 6 weeks. And then we place people in jobs. And we have a hugely successful job placement rate now, too, And especially after 6 months, we're following up with people to make sure they still have jobs, that their incomes have increased as a result. And then these folks have the same kinds of challenges that Mika was talking about earlier, too, with families. They have a lot of barriers. They haven't been successful. Every time we have a graduation, we hear people say, this is the first thing I've ever completed in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really moving because they really can feel great and confident about what they've learned and what they have now to take with them, because they will always be able to work in the food industry. There's so many jobs out there for that.
Yeah, and moving up, because, you know, the food industry in some levels, it's not necessarily going to get you out of poverty unless you move up through it.
Right.
So the folks who've worked at Whole Foods who become managers, you know,
right.
picking the right companies to work for that treat their
right.
folks right. The thing I like most about the culinary and the chef events are that the school and all the events sit right next to the administrative offices, the emergency and transitional housing. They're right in the middle of the programs of Homeward Bound. So I have some friends who would never, ever go and see any of
right.
Homeward Bound's programs. They would be scared. They wouldn't go near it.
Right.
However, they are very interested in taking a cooking class by Michael Min or something like that.
Yeah.
So they'll end up at the cooking class, and then they'll get to see the rest of the program. And some of those people will then become donors and supporters to the program. So it's located right. And so it dispels a lot of the fear.
Right.
Oh, this is transitional housing for homeless? This doesn't look like what I would imagine it to be.
This is a shelter next door?
Yeah.
That's exactly why we did it that way, too.
It's
to bring people on site. And dispel the myths.
And
have
special events
have.
Like you can have. This is a beautiful kind of center that the next key center that they built. You can have conferences there. You can have weddings, and it's a really nice spot. And it's priced well, so people come in and they're exposed to an organization that they may not even know. Even though Marin's small, a lot of people still haven't heard of. You know,
right.
people just kind of have their blinders. They just don't hear about it. You don't read the papers and follow it, and they get exposed to what it is. So I really like the entrepreneurial side. When I worked at the foundation, I was always really turned on to groups like Rubicon and Lark, you know, some other groups that I'm trying to think of the group.
Delancey Street
was one of the ones I really like, and the ones that work at the ballparks, Juma Ventures.
Yep.
And I always like it because I really think there's something to it about earning your own money and understanding
right.
that you can't just constantly ask. Foundations also like it too. When an organization says, we generated this amount of money
right.
from our enterprise, it's very hard to be successful at it, but it also gives folks in the organization a chance to get real life work and real life experience, because like permanent supportive housing in the workplace, a lot of people tend to fall and fail. They don't do the wrong things. In most workplaces, you're just fired. But in an environment where you have some support around it, you can fail once or twice and then eventually figure out what you need to do to succeed before you move into more of the regular employment.
It's completely different when people are invested in your success rather than just in the success of their enterprise.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Big difference. So what people in the community can do to help advance your mission is take these cooking classes,
Absolutely.
Book events at the venue, and they can learn all about this by going to your website, which is?
hbofm.org or hbofm.org.
Yeah, I think it's HBM. More it's not just the financial. Obviously, there's the donors and supporting at the fireside level. It's the volunteers. We have pro bono yoga instructors. We have people coming down and contributing backpacks, different things that really help us day to day. We have a church, Peace Lutheran, that is just very involved with our food pantry. There's so many ways to get involved. You can go through the central office and figure out, because there's children's programs that work with seniors, figure out where you fit best into the
right.
organization and where you can give and fit. You know?
We have over 1,000 volunteers a year who work with us, and some of them are people who have been with us for so long at Mill Street. The congregation's bringing meals every single night there. I mean, there's endless ways to be involved in this kind of work.
Fantastic. Well, I applaud your efforts and your successes, certainly. Mika Berman, Homeward Bound's Program Director, and Dr. Mary Kay Sweeney, Executive Director of Homeward Bound of Marin County. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
To hear prior episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, free on iTunes, visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.